Hello, welcome to Literally from the North Shore, and thanks for tuning in. Today we continue with KTWH volunteer Beth Alexander's reading of Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach's book, A River Through Two Harbors. This book chronicles fictional North Shore law enforcement officer Deidre Johnson, who uncovers a crime ring that is trafficking Native girls to the harbor in Duluth. This book contains mature themes and may not be appropriate for all listeners. We pick up where Beth left off last time.
She confidently strode down the steps of the courthouse, holding her head high and still wearing a smile. Deidre applauded the performance, and the girls came running downstairs to see what the excitement was about. "It's nothing, girls. Just an old friend of mine getting what he deserves. Go on up and finish playing. Daddy will be home soon." She turned off the TV and contemplated what she had just witnessed. Gerald Coulter had his tail in a ringer, and it was pulling him ever closer to disaster. Then she thought of the judge. He had taken care of his problem in his own way. Latourell and Jameson were in jail, not able to post bail. Their trial set to take place during the coming summer. The thought hit her that she should make good on her promise to look up the girls she had rescued. Not only that, she wanted to visit with Melissa and her daughter, and she hadn't heard from Jill for many weeks. Chapter 35. The last time Deidre traveled to Thunder Bay, the roads were covered with snow and the trip had taken 4 hours. Today, the sun was shining brightly, the temperature was in the 70s, and she was cruising along a little over the posted speed limit. As she rounded a curve, she was treated to the sight of a bay of Lake Superior, and she thought how lucky she was to be able to enjoy the scenery without having to be worrying about a murder or kidnapping. 2 days before, she had called Charles Freeman, the chief of police for the Anishinaabe-Aski Cree Nation. He had given her information about the girls, Allison, Jean, Kimmy, and the others who had been rescued. After calling the people at social services, and with the aid of Charles, Deidre was able to set up a meeting with the six of them. A picnic had been scheduled in one of the parks near where they were receiving care. She parked her car in a small lot and walked across the newly mown lawn, and the smell of the cut grass reminded her of how sterile winter was in the Northland. Across the park, she could see a group readying a table for a picnic, and she recognized Kimmy, who was waving at her. "Deidre, Deidre, over here," the girl called out excitedly. She was beautiful, Deidre thought. The others turned and all waved at her. When Deidre was closer, she could see the meal she had ordered from a caterer had arrived, and the girls and a social worker had everything laid out. They hugged and stepped back to look at each other. A few tears were shed, and finally, the social worker said, "I think it's time we ate this great-looking food." One of the girls extracted a pinch of tobacco from a pouch hanging from a lace on her belt and, scattering it in the breeze, gave thanks to the Creator for his provision. She felt a kinship with the girls who bowed their heads for an instant. Then everyone rushed for her plate and began loading it with standard picnic food. Deidre watched as they giggled like schoolgirls should, and she marveled at how healthy they looked. Someone, probably many people, were making a difference in their lives. Time passed swiftly. Too soon, Deidre had to say it was time to leave. "Will you girls clean up the area? I want to talk a moment with Deidre," the social worker said. They walked toward a paved path, and the girls began their task. "I know you came here to find out how they are doing. Kimmy is having the most trouble. She still has nightmares and at times becomes very withdrawn, but she's getting better. Allison and Jean carry a great deal of guilt because they think if they had been courageous enough to leave with Anna and Kimmy, they might have been able to overcome Jason Leader when he grabbed Anna. The three you found at the camp don't know you as well. One of them had a terrible urinary tract infection that had traveled to her kidneys. It took a while, but with antibiotics, the infection was cured. Doctors think there was no permanent damage done. All of them are receiving psychological help, and two will be going home to their families next week. The other four have become wards of the state because their parents can't be located or are deemed unfit. Their psychologists agree that it will be years, if ever, before they can put this behind them. Each of them will have to exorcise their demons in their own way and in their own time. All we can do is walk with them on their journey and give them all the support we can. I know you might have wanted better news for all of them, but we think they are far ahead of the game. She was silent for a few steps. Then she stopped and faced Deirdre. Our nation owes you a great deal. We struggle every day, trying to undo the damage that's been done to our people going back 200 years when our tribes were conquered by the Europeans. But we are making progress. As you saw when an offering was made to Manitou, we still hold on to many of our beliefs, at the same time living in the 21st century. People like you are making it possible for us to gain back our lives. For a moment, Deirdre was speechless. She shrugged. They are strong, aren't they? The social worker nodded. Deirdre made arrangements to meet Jill at a cozy eatery off Waterfront Drive in Two Harbors, Louise's place. She arrived earlier than intended and was browsing the collection of rolls and cakes in a display case when Jill walked in. Deirdre would not have recognized her had she not anticipated Jill's arrival. Jill's hair, which had formerly been rainbow-colored and then light brown, was dyed black, as were her eyebrows. For the first time, Deirdre noticed that she had dark brown eyes. "Jill, it's great to see you," she said, then added, "I wouldn't have recognized you with your new hair color." Jill selected a chair at a corner table. "Yeah, well, it's a long story if you're interested." Deirdre could tell there was something Jill needed to say. "I know I looked a mess when you met me. You must have known I was hiding behind my weird hairdo and dress. I really hated myself for what I was doing." A waitress asked them what they wanted to drink, and they both ordered coffee. Jill asked Deirdre if she wanted anything to go with it, and they both ordered a Danish pastry. "There's something I've tried to hide since I was a little girl, and it nearly destroyed my life." The waitress returned with their order, and Deirdre's mind conjured up a raft of thoughts, including incest, rape, or an alcoholic mother. "My mother is a full member of the Anishinaabe Indian Nation. She's a good woman, but I was always ashamed of her and my heritage. In high school, kids, especially the boys, called me smoked meat and said I was a tar paper blonde." Deirdre looked at her former secretary. With her black hair, her skin color did appear more swarthy than most, but so did some Finns of Sami descent, or even some whose relatives had immigrated from the northern part of Norway. What hurt almost as much were the kids from the Rez, who called me an apple, red on the outside, white on the inside. I became rebellious and bitter. Look where it got me. Deirdre reached over and touched Jill's hand. "I'm sorry, but it seems as though you've pulled things together, right? Are you going to take Melissa up on her offer to help you apply at the BCA office?" Jill smiled. "No, I've decided against it." Deirdre looked startled. "As we worked on this trafficking case, my eyes were opened to the plight of those girls and the uphill battle they were fighting. See this black hair? It's dyed, but when it grows out, this will be its natural color. After seeing you work so hard to help those kids, and after seeing their will to survive, I thought, who am I to deny my heritage? I am Anishinaabe. We were a noble people once. Most still are. Those who look down on us are wrong. Why should I be ashamed of my heritage? No, I'm not going to go to the cities to be a secretary. Not that there's anything wrong with being a secretary. It's just that I need to be close to my mother's people. I've enrolled for the next semester's program at the tribal college near Duluth. Because of my Anishinaabe blood, I'll receive quite a bit of financial help. In the meantime, I'll do temp work and continue to volunteer at the women's shelter in town." Deirdre asked about the guy Jill had seen over Christmas, her former classmate. "Him?" Jill said with scorn. "All he was after was a quick fling while he was in town." "I'm glad you turned him down," Deirdre consoled her. She wholeheartedly endorsed Jill's plan, and for the remainder of the time they spent together, they talked about their hopes and dreams, Deirdre not being explicit about hers. After spending the weekend with Ben and the girls, on Monday morning Deirdre drove to Minneapolis. She was to meet Melissa and Jessica at a small, out-of-the-way eatery, and they were already seated in a booth when she arrived. Jessica looked refreshed. The black circles under her eyes were gone, and she had a smile on her face. Melissa slid over to make room for Deirdre and took her hand. "So how are things?" Deirdre asked, not quite sure how to begin the conversation. Jessica shrugged but smiled. "It's been an adjustment for both of us. The difference this time is that when one of us is bothered, we talk about it without snapping at each other. I have to remember that Jessica has seen more of the street scene than I ever will. And I have to remember that Mom runs the house," Jessica finished her mother's sentence. "But it's working. getting better every week. I can't say every day because we have our moments, but it's going to work. Deirdre didn't quite know where to go from there, but before she could say anything, Jessica continued. I want to thank you for being there for me. I know, without a doubt, I couldn't have returned home on my own. During the ride down, I wanted to open the door and jump out. If you'd have stopped at a rest area, I planned to make a run for it. Deirdre was surprised. She knew that Jessica was struggling with her decision, but she hadn't been aware just how much. I don't think I could screw up the courage to do it again. Jessica fished a tissue from her pocket and blew her nose. Anyway, thanks for being there when I needed you. Up to that point, Deirdre had said nothing. Now she asked, what are your plans? School? Sports? Music? Right now, what interests you? Jessica looked a little embarrassed. I'm so far behind in school, there's no way I'll ever graduate with my class. I'd be an old lady of 21 if I went the conventional route. She smirked at that thought. I'm attending an alternative school, trying to make some progress, although most kids at that school are just killing time. I might be able to attend summer school and take extra night classes. If I can't graduate by the time I'm 19, I've decided to go for my GED. From there, maybe a community college or tech school. But who knows? I might even continue on to a four-year school. My life is up in the air, and I'm not sure where it's going to land. Deirdre slouched a little so she could look Jessica, who had her head bowed, directly in her eyes. Everyone messes up sometime. You're one of the lucky ones. You screwed up early, and you have a lifetime ahead of you. You have the support of your mother. You have a short-range plan in place. You're sheltered, fed, clothed. You have a second chance. I have confidence you'll complete your schooling. You'll find your niche, and you're going to make a difference to others. You're a strong young lady, a survivor. The three of them sat in the booth for a long time. The clientele turned over at least twice. Before Deirdre knew it, she had to wish mother and daughter the best and say her goodbyes. On the way home, she wondered if Jessica would adjust or if the day would come when some voice called her to bolt again. For Melissa's sake, she hoped that all would be well, but Deirdre knew that the recidivism rate among runaways was high. In an awkward way, she said a prayer for the two of them. Chapter 36. Deirdre labored under the straps of a Duluth pack, a traditional way of carrying supplies and equipment over the portage trails of the Boundary Waters canoe area. Mosquitoes bored holes in her bare arms, deer flies became entwined in her hair, and sweat streamed down her face. It was June 16th, and through breaks in the overhead canopy, the sun was beating on the four campers. A refreshing breeze was blowing, but for those on the trail, the trees and brush didn't allow it to reach the hikers, and the humidity from the decaying duff on the ground created a sweltering microclimate. "Are we almost there yet?" Megan asked, as she stumbled over a root in the trail. "Almost," Ben encouraged. "Look, you can see the lake through the trees. If we walk over the next hill, we'll be there." "You said that 2 hills ago," Marin complained. "This time I mean it," Ben chuckled. "We're almost there." Deirdre licked her lips and wished she had an ice-cold bottle of anything to drink, but just when she thought she could go no further, she crested the hill. A panorama stretched out before her that stopped her in her tracks. It was one of the most beautiful lakes she had ever seen. Bordered by jack pines and cedar trees, it was the purest blue she could remember, and the breeze moving across its surface caught her sweaty hair and blew it off her face. Deirdre picked her way over the rocks in the trail and descended the drop. She drew in a deep breath, enjoying the smell of the lake, and set the pack down by the water's edge. Ben lifted the canoe from his shoulders and set it down on shore. The twins shed their small packs, and all four campers flopped down in the green grass of the canoe landing. They lay on their backs for several minutes, and then the girls jumped up, raced to the water's edge, and began trying to catch minnows with their hands. "Okay, everybody, time to load up and move out," Ben announced. Ben pulled the canoe into knee-deep water, and Deirdre handed him 2 large packs, the one she had carried and the one he had toted while he also carried the canoe. He placed them strategically in the bottom of the canoe, making sure the craft remained balanced, and then they stowed the small packs the girls had brought. "Life jackets, everyone," Ben commanded, and they were ready to shove off. The girls were tucked in among the packs. Deirdre sat in front and Ben in the stern. The adults paddled and the girls dragged their fingers in the water. The day was as perfect as it could get. They crossed three lakes, being able to pass from one to the other through narrows just wide enough to allow the canoe to be navigated. Late in the afternoon, the canoe scraped its way up on the gravel shore, and Deirdre stepped out, steadied the canoe while the girls crawled over the packs and jumped to dry ground, and held it while Ben stepped into the shallow water. "We're home," he announced, and Deirdre could sense the peace in his voice. She surveyed the site where they would camp for the next 2 nights and 3 days. A small river ran past, a short connecting waterway between two lakes, and the rocky channel flowed near the shore where she stood. Deirdre would have perched on a rock and allowed the river to cascade around her feet, but Ben had another idea. "Come on, gang. We've got to get the camp set up before dark. Girls, help me with our tent. Deirdre, why don't you set yours right here?" He pointed to a soft spot of ground. "And who made you boss?" Deirdre asked as she jokingly jabbed him in the ribs. But she unrolled the tent that was made for one person. She thought two could squeeze in if they had to. Perhaps she'd invite the girls to cuddle a while before they fell asleep. By late afternoon, the place felt like home in the wilderness. Their tents were set up, Ben had a small cooking fire going, a coffee pot was on the grate, and everyone had taken a dip in the river to cool off and wash away the day's dirt. Deirdre leaned her back against a pine tree while she sat on her life jacket. Ben was in his element, cooking supper, feeding the fire, and trying to keep a chipmunk from stealing their food pack. She and the girls tried to get a jay to eat from their fingers. It would come within inches of their hands, but then become alarmed, flying to a low-hanging branch while it screwed up its courage to try again. After supper, they took a ride in the canoe, following close to the shoreline. Not far from camp, a disturbance in the water, a black hump that was moving toward them, caught their attention. When they were too close, the beaver slapped its tail on the surface and dived underwater, much to the girls' delight. In the distance, two loons called to each other. Deirdre wished the tranquility would last forever. "Time to go back to camp," Ben decided, and he pointed the canoe toward their temporary home. When they arrived, Deirdre mixed a cup of mocha with hot coffee and instant hot chocolate. Ben was in the tent trying to get his daughter settled in for the night, and twilight had turned the sky purple as Deirdre stood by the water flowing past their campsite, her cup in hand. She thought she heard the sound of paddles in the water, but wasn't quite sure. Then she heard a muffled voice. It was a man's, and it sounded like he said there was someone at the campsite they wanted to use. A canoe painted with camouflage markings rounded the bend of the river, and two men were paddling as fast as they could. Deirdre waited for them to come closer and called out, "Care to stop for a cup of coffee?" "No thanks. We've got to get to the next campsite before dark," the man in front growled at her. Their canoe shot by, aided by the stream's current, but in that flash, Deirdre got a good look at the bottom of the canoe, and a shiver jolted her body. An olive drab duffel bag lay between the paddlers, and Deirdre was sure she saw movement inside it as they whisked by. Before she could react, the canoe and its occupants disappeared around the bend, and she heard one of the men curse. 5 minutes later, the canoe scraped on the beach, and she heard the sounds of a camp being hurriedly set up. Not thinking of the consequences, Deirdre quietly slipped her canoe into the water and slowly worked her way downstream. In the distance, she saw the flicker of a campfire, revealing the location of the travelers. She steered the canoe near a large rock and soundlessly stepped out. After wedging the canoe between a tree that had fallen in the water and the rock, Deirdre began to creep toward the men, stopping only when she was close enough to observe their actions and hear their conversation. One of them was untying the duffel bag. "That's the biggest darn northern I've ever seen," one said. "Must be close to 40 inches long," the other one answered. He reached into the bag and pulled out a huge fish that flopped in his hands. It was still alive. "If we put it in the water on a stringer tonight, we might be able to keep it alive until morning. This baby's going on my wall as soon as I can get a taxidermist to do the job. But let's get our story straight. I don't want anybody to know where we caught it. Let's say it was in Ojibwe Lake. That's not too far from here, and once in a while, somebody catches a good-sized fish there." Deirdre sat in the brush, her heart pounding and feeling weak as the adrenaline in her system dissipated. She listened as the fishing buddies recounted to each other the experience of catching a lunker. Then, as quietly as she had approached them, she slunk off through the woods, reached her canoe, and paddled back to camp. Ben was standing by the water's edge, anxiously waiting for her to return. "Where the heck were you?" he asked. "I was getting worried that you had gotten lost." "No," Deidre said as nonchalantly as she could. "The water was so calm, I just wanted to float downstream a ways and listen to the evening sounds without any background noise. Are the girls asleep?" Ben nodded and took Deidre in his arms. She was still shivering, and he thought she was cold. "Come, let's warm you by the fire," he led her to the blaze. The two of them talked until the drone of mosquitoes leaving the underbrush in search of prey began to sound ominous. "Sleep tight," Ben said, and kissed Deidre goodnight. They went to their separate tents. She had just crawled into her sleeping bag when she heard scratching on her tent, and she lifted her head to see what was making the noise. "Deidre, is it okay if I come in with you for a few minutes?" It was Ben. "That'd be okay, I guess," she answered. "Are the girls still asleep?" She heard the zipper of her tent come undone, and Ben crawled in and lay beside her. It was a tight fit, and she could feel his body next to hers, although she was inside her sleeping bag and he outside. "There's something I want to talk to you about," Ben began, and Deidre detected the nervousness in his voice. "What's that?" she asked, wondering what to expect. "I just wanted you to know before somebody else told you that I've met someone I'm going to ask to be my wife. I didn't want you to hear the news through the rumor mill or before the girls spilled the beans." Deidre's mind spun, and she bit her lip to keep from blurting out the question, "Who is it?" Instead, she took a deep breath. "How long have you known her?" was all she could think to ask. "Quite a while. She was awfully hard to get to know, I'll say that. But when we did, our love for each other just grew, at least mine did." Deidre was silent for many seconds. "What would become of the girls if she says yes?" "I suppose they'll learn to call her mom. I think it'll work out really well. She tells me she loves them." "But not like I do," Deidre wanted to say. Ben continued, "She was a high school classmate of mine." "But that means she was a classmate of mine, too. I wonder. It's got to be Jolene, that tramp. Ben, you could do better than that." "We couldn't stand each other back then. In fact, years ago, she hurt me bad." Deidre turned to face Ben, but the interior of the tent was too dark to make out his expression. "Oh, do you mean she jilted you?" "No, I mean she hurt me, broke my foot when she stomped on it." Finally, the light bulb came on in Deidre's head. "But of course you didn't deserve it." "I deserved it. I was a jerk." "Yes, you were," Deidre said, and tried to suppress a laugh. "Deidre, will you marry me?" He choked up and couldn't say any more, but he took Deidre's hands and held them between his. "Yes," was all Deidre could squeak out as her throat tightened around the words. She leaned forward and kissed Ben, and from the other tent she heard two high-pitched voices call out in unison, "Good night, Mom."
You've been listening to the final episode of A River Through Two Harbors by Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach. If you've missed an episode, you can find it on our website, ktwh.org, by clicking on Programs and then selecting Literally from the North Shore from the drop-down list. All the episodes, including this one, can be found there for you to catch up on and finish the book. To learn more about human trafficking in Minnesota, go to www.yourcall.mn.org.